Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I am your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday, and the impact it has on their business. I almost forgot to introduce my co-host. That would be terrible.
Sometimes I find myself forgettable.
Oh, never. That voice is the voice of Andy Lowe, my co-host, producer, all-around good guy. Good morning, Andy.
How are you doing this morning, Dr. Tim? Are you able to stay cool with this rising heat here in Atlanta?
We're doing the best we can.
I think we're approaching some triple digits this week, they're saying.
And it's only June.
I'm used to us getting the temperature up in here, but
outside.
Outside is a whole different story.
Well, let's hope it stays cool in here as we go on through the show today. And in today's show, we look at a theme of happiness. Now, this is the first time we've actually made happiness as a focus for conversation. And I've chosen to do that because our two authors or guests share their unique journeys and perspective on happiness. Diane Dunn and I have been colleagues, fellow journeyers, and perhaps most importantly, friends for more than 15 years. Diane began her professional career in theater in New York City. Today, Diane owns and operates Paz y Luz Healing Center and Conference Center in Cusco's Sacred Valley in Peru, actually in the village of Pizac. And in between, she earned her Master's of Divinity degree and developed a church-based community outreach program for the homeless and unemployed people in downtown Johannesburg, South Africa. Diane is known as a healer and a teacher, and she leads workshops literally throughout the world. Our other guest is Dr. Ken Harmon, who is the Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at Kennesaw State University. Prior to this appointment, Dr. Harmon served as Dean of Kennesaw State University's Coles College of Business. Ken has served in faculty and administrative positions with six other universities. Now, Diane has written two books, Cusco, The Gateway to Inner Wisdom, and Cusco II, The Magic of the Munikai, A Love Story. And Ken currently is writing his book with the working title of Managing Happiness. And in that book, he discusses how leaders can understand the research on happiness and use that information to create a better workplace environment. And so welcome to you both. Good morning to you. And let's jump right in. Diane, can you tell us about the start of your writing journey?
Well, I had an amazing journey or experience going from South Africa to Peru, mm-hmm. that was filled with lots of magic and grace. And I got an inspiration, really. I can say that I got the message during a meditation, mm-hmm. that I needed to write a book about it.
And that's great.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just, okay, I'm going to write and wrote, did you? You had several iterations, I think.
Well, actually, I thought I was going to get my best friend Wendy to write the book for me because she was a writer.
Uh-huh.
So I was going to give her my journals and say, Wendy, can you write this book for me? And she turned around and said to me, we're going to write this book together.
Uh-huh.
So it was a very beautiful experience working with her and learning from her how to be a better writer and to tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first book is pretty much your own journey. Your second book is as well, but the journeys are somewhat different in nature.
Well, I would say one is a continuation of the other.
Yeah.
But the first version of the first book, mm-hmm. was written in 2001. And then it didn't end up getting published until 2006, where I made some changes and, mm-hmm. and additions to it. But people would ask me, are you going to write another book? And I'd say, well, not until I have something more to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it took, well, in 2011, after I'd been teaching the Munikai initiation rites, I think it was 14 countries and, you know, more than 20 times and on six continents. So it really made me see how the impact of the rites, how powerful they were, and it didn't matter what culture, what you know, religion or ethnic background that people had. So that was really what inspired me to begin with. And it just happened that I received the Munaiki rites myself the first time, or learned about the Munaiki, just a week before I met my husband, Krister. So that's how the stories became intertwined in the book.
Yeah, that's powerful. I've read the book. That's why I can sit here and say that's powerful. I know. But Cusco too is even more than that, and you and I have talked about that, and it's part of why I wanted to discuss happiness, because I shared with Ken before we went on air that, you know, managing happiness, and we're looking at a business perspective here, that's somewhat of a, doesn't go together. But, and the happiness that you have experienced in the past year or two, and what I even see as I'm looking at you, is not one that most people would anticipate to see in someone in your journey. So with that kind of lead-in, could you talk a little bit more about the love story?
Well, I started the book when Krister was still with me, and I was maybe three quarters of the way through, and we were planning to go to my mom's 90th birthday party in Florida in June last year, and then we were both going to go to Europe in August, and I was going to teach some workshops, and Krister would help me sometimes with the workshops that the Munaiki workshops. And so I said to him, you know, I'm going to wait on these last three chapters because I feel like there's something that hasn't happened yet that needs to go in this book. And I was really thinking more about the workshops in Europe and thinking maybe something was going to happen there that I needed to put in the book. But we went up to Florida for my mom's birthday party, and Krister, well, we went out the first night that we got there with the family and had a great time, and the next morning Krister got up and said, just suddenly, I can't breathe. And he passed out, and I called an ambulance, and they took him to the emergency room. He'd had a pulmonary embolism, which is blood clots in the lung. It stopped his heart. They revived him several times, but in the end, he was deprived of oxygen too long and had some brain damage. So he was in the hospital for 12 days, but never fully regained consciousness. Mm-hmm. I was able to communicate with him. I know he could hear me. He was on a ventilator, so he didn't speak, but he would answer me by blinking his eyes. Mm-hmm. So it was not really the way that I wanted to spend our wedding anniversary, which was just after my mom's birthday party. But it was an amazing journey to be able to be so fully present there with him, and to recognize that he needed to decide whether he could come back or whether he needed to cross over, and that I could, that I told him that I would help him do whatever, whichever he chose. And it was, I say to people, you know, it's an amazing thing when the worst thing that you can possibly imagine happens, and at the same time that it can be one of the most beautiful experiences that you've ever had. And although it was very sad for me, I didn't want him to go, I felt a very big heart opening in those days with him. And I know that it is the most unconditionally loving thing that I've ever experienced in my life, helping him
make that transition.
Yeah.
And you told it so well. I mean, just watching your face, that's the downside of this medium, is that people can't see your expression, but it was just the peace on your face as you talk about that. I don't want to sound mechanical, but why I wanted you on and to share, not just so that it gave us a chance to renew our friendship, but you talked about, you knew the book wasn't done. You knew that there was something yet to happen. And I think that's valuable for people to understand who are wanting to write or who are writing. So often clients will say, I know what I'm going to write, and they write, and they don't leave room for the spirit to come in or for God or for whomever, their muse, to say, maybe you need to go over here. I'm sure you weren't ready the very next day to say, oh, this is what I'm supposed to write about, though.
Well, I did actually. I mean, I went, I had a little more time in the States, and and then I went back home and then went to Sweden. My husband was from Sweden to be with his family. Mm-hmm. But when I got back from Europe, I started writing. It flowed for me. But I can say, having written the ending, I had to, you know, that included that story and all my experiences of processing that as the months went by.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go back to the beginning again and look at the tone of the book.
Absolutely.
From the beginning.
Sure.
So, and again, with the help of my dear friend Wendy, who helped me work on that, to just go through it and be a little more intentional about, there were already stories about me and Krister, you know, ways of negotiating things that were related to different rights. You know, the book is set up a chapter for each one of the 9 Moonai key rites. And so there were already stories. But Wendy had suggested that I include, make sure that there was at least one story about Krister or me and Krister in each chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So that there was more focus from the beginning on the story, the love story.
Sure.
As well as the rites. Because I think when I first started writing the book, I was thinking it would be a little more directed at what are the rites and what do they do and how do they impact your life, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And the beauty for me in that is how you were able to take what you had and add that other dimension to it. When I read it, what I experienced was that human touch that I know is so much you. But for you to put those stories in there along with, well, this is what this rite is, this is what we do here, and this is what happens, and you share the stories of how you actualized it in your own life, really powerful, really powerful. And I like the idea, I like the concept that you knew you needed to make some changes in it, and you were more than willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the reaction, and you have literally traveled the world in teaching all of this, and your book is being read around the world. What kind of reactions do you get from people?
Well, it's still new, the book.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the classes that I've done this year, they're just getting they're buying the book from me while I'm there.
Uh-huh.
So, but certainly the feedback that I've gotten from people who have read it and written to me it's been very moving for them. And I think that although it didn't seem really to me at the time like an alternative way to look at losing the love of your life, for me, as I was going through it, it was what happened. It wasn't like a decision that I made. Should I be miserable or should I open my heart to this process? It happened. that my heart opened mm-hmm. to the process and that I was able to be fully present there with him, knowing that whatever the outcome was going to be the best outcome.
Great.
And then I looked back and said, okay, what made that the default program?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I look at my, you know, my own spiritual practice and knew that all those steps, all that practice that led up to that enabled me to do that. And so I think the readers can see, like, wow, okay, you know, it doesn't that it doesn't have to be devastating
mm-hmm.
or yeah. only devastating,
mm-hmm.
because of course, on a certain level, it was
oh, sure
pretty
it was.
Devastating.
Sure was.
But to be able to experience the amount of love that was all around me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly my having my family all there. And we don't all are able to get together so often. So mm-hmm. it really was very special that that everybody was there and that I was supported in that way. And I chose to put it on Facebook the day by day what was happening
mm-hmm.
because we have so many friends all around the world and different time zones and different countries. It also became, I mean, there was so much love and support coming in from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I just felt surrounded by love. And when you, I think often we're surrounded by love, but if our heart isn't open.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
To receive it or to be conscious that it's there,
mm-hmm.
then you don't feel the benefits of it. But I was very grateful that I could feel the benefits of it. And so it just, it made everything so much easier.
I'm sure. Yeah, that's powerful. I'm drinking in all the words. It's great to watch you and to listen to you share these. I want to move on and talk with Ken, but before I do that, folks want to be in touch with you, Diane. Get your book. What's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I suppose to go on my website. There's a page that says book.
Okay.
So shall I say the website?
No, absolutely. That's why I asked. I'm going to ask it again later on. So
okay. It's so. www.pazyluzperu, which is pazyluzperu.com.
Okay. And I know you're willing to sit while we talk to Ken, and then maybe we'll talk with everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Ken, you've waited patiently.
That wasn't too difficult to wait through.
Yeah.
It's quite an inspiration.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
Quite an inspiration. Yeah. Thank you.
So you're working on your first book.
Well, yes. I've written academic things before. this is the first one that has, you know, it's really interesting.
Oh. So tell me about those academic books that you've written.
Oh, and things like accounting and internal control and software and fraud.
But it helped establish you as to who you are, right?
I guess something did. I think maybe my background doing songwriting prepared me more for this side of the writing.
There's a whole another story there. I know there is.
We don't have time for that with the dad.
Oh, okay.
But I learned a lot about reaching inside myself and grabbing something different and trying to put that on paper through that process.
Okay, and your working title is Managing Happiness. Are we talking business setting, life setting, everything, all of the above, none of the above?
Interestingly, the primary focus is to be a business setting.
Mm-hmm.
Just my background, been a business professor for 30 years, had my own businesses, et cetera. I've been in a lot of businesses, and there were certain things I started to see. And It was there was a kind of an epiphany point at which I said, that's it. Mm-hmm. This is the connection. These are the workplaces I go into, the leaders I'm around, and here is the kind of culture they have that people want to be in. Mm-hmm. And then there are these other toxic and more negative cultures. And so I felt like just the platform I had, I felt the need to speak to the business world and talk about attaching to this notion of happiness and what mm-hmm. makes people happy and how you create this wonderful culture. Interestingly enough, it's given me also now doing that, people just want to hear about happiness as well. Mm. And so in fact, just this morning, I was exchanging some emails with some folks over in Bucharest, Romania, and I'm going to go over there and teach some leadership things at a school there. And they said, could you do a seminar one night on happiness? And I said, well, now last year we did one on managing happiness and business. And they said, no, just make that focus happiness.
Wow.
We are hearing so much that people just want to hear. So just this morning I scheduled a night in September that we'll be talking about happiness in Bucharest. So it's given me that kind of entree. Again, my mm-hmm. background doesn't lend itself to that, but I'm very passionate about it.
So I'm sitting here. You're a professor, you're a provost, you've been a dean, you've written about accounting. Bring in happiness here for
me. Isn't it logical? No.
I'm sure it is.
No, it's not.
That's why I'm asking
it's
you.
It's not. There are probably three points in time I could point to. I'm going to start with the most recent. I've become business dean again for a second time at Coles College here. I've mm-hmm. been a dean elsewhere before. And I became dean here. And I was talking to my wife about, you know, I'm feeling this need for something else in my life. And we were having this discussion. And just left it at that. And then the next morning, I was driving to see my oldest daughter up in South Carolina. And I was driving along the interstate, and I heard an interview with Dr. Dan Gilbert of Harvard, and he had just written this book on happiness. And I listened to that interview, and I came back home the next day, and I said, that's it. That's what it was. That is the piece that links everything I've been looking for together. And I actually then recalled back in the 90s and going through a difficult time of life and picking up a book. I went to a bookstore and just started grabbing books. Very difficult day. Grabbing books, and there was this little bitty book on being happy.
Hmm.
And I recalled that book, and I went over to the bookshelf and found it. And I had moved it with me a few times. And then I recalled, now this is an odd one, but I recalled a day sitting, I was at the University of Missouri, and we would go to this place called the Old Heidelberg in the afternoon, and I was sitting with some professor friends of mine. This was back in the late 80s, and I remember we would be pontificating on research and different things, and these were some management professors, and I, all of a sudden, out of left field, I asked, tell me, what does love have to do with management?
Whoa.
And
this was at the Old Heidelberg.
At the right? Old Heidelberg.
Which is a beer garden.
Well, yeah, you probably yeah. Were, yeah.
I just wanted to put the perspective in there, okay?
Exactly. And that's probably how the question came out of left
field. Yeah, well, I'll bet it did.
The question came out of the beer. And so they got this stunned look and kind of thought it was just a ridiculous question, and but it really hit me at that time. I remember thinking, you know, why is it that we as human beings think that the business world is a place that's different? And that's what then comes forward, and I've walked into so many CPA firms. I mm-hmm. mean, all of my career as an accounting professor, and you go into CPA firms, you go into businesses, and you go into places, and sometimes they're warm and wonderful. I can think of a CPA firm here in Atlanta that I went into, and I walked off the elevator. Within 5 minutes, I knew it was this different place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was because this one guy who was the leader there, and he is that kind of person, this warm, wonderful person. And I think those kinds of leaders attach to something different in the people around them. And what I finally think I figured out was that the missing link is they, whether consciously or subconsciously, attach to what makes people happy. And so I felt to look at the research on happiness. So I have just really delved into the research on happiness, and I've looked at the corporate climate research, and we're trying to pull all of that together and see if we can help people create better environments.
Wow, that's powerful.
It's fun.
I'll bet it is. Seriously, bringing all those pieces together. How far along are you with this?
I can honestly say not far enough.
Okay.
The writing I have written the table of contents and portions of every chapter, one of those kind of skeletal things. The most progress I made was a while back, a friend of mine, I think he was on your show, Sheb. Sheb True, he had said something about I could use his cabin in the mountains.
Ooh.
So I went up by myself for the weekend and just sat at my computer, and it was one of the most wonderful experiences. Things just start to flow out of you. It's one of those writing experiences, and I just have to have some more of those. And I will sit down at times, but I really enjoy those moments when I can sit down and just lose myself in it. And so I have written an article. I've done a lot of lectures here and internationally on the subject. And every time I do, I go back and I have notes that I keep up with to write the book and put it into different chapters. So I'm still fleshing it out. And so I feel like I have a good format. It's just the time factor
at
this point.
Sure. Yeah. First, let me say, if anybody's interested in hearing what Sheb had to say, he appeared on the show on May 15th. So our listeners can go into the archives and listen to that interview of Sheb True back on May 15th. The other thing I wanted to point up is that we had Joel Manby on this show first Tuesday in June, June 5th. And Joel Manby is the CEO and president of Hirsch and Family Entertainment. They own Stone Mountain, and they manage 30 other theme parks around the country, Dollywood, things like that. His book is called Love Wins, and he is hardcore CEO corporate. He was the CEO of Saturn Car Manufacturing. He also was the head of Volvo. I think it was Volvo North America. And so he knows hardcore CEO, and Hirsch and Family Entertainment is a Christian-based company. Now there, and he said, you know, we're not in your face about it, but it's what motivates us. And he firmly believes that love can work in the workplace and win out and have an impact. And those who are interested in what you're saying today, and I certainly am, and I think everybody who's tuned in, I think we'll find Joel's book just as challenging, and I think the two of you need to connect.
Oh, I'd love to.
And we'll make that happen. What have been the aha moments for you as you've been writing, researching?
A number of the aha moments, as I just described, hearing Dan Gilbert talk. He's one of those I just follow as a devotee. But I had taken a stack of books up to the cabin, and I started reading and just taking notes. You just take notes and have pieces of paper everywhere. And I came upon an old Harvard Business Review article, and the exact title I forget, but it's something to the effect of, why incentive pay does not work.
Oh.
And I thought, well, isn't this interesting? Because so much of management theory historically was around the idea that as long as I just give people raises and give them enough money, everything else just falls into place. And this was a wonderfully written article in Harvard Business Review that showed that's not the case. And I thought it was a very compelling point. And it is one of those things that I thought, that makes sense, actually, because we know from the happiness research about what does and what doesn't make us happy. And speaking of aha moments, I think another is realizing that we as human beings don't understand our own happiness. we chase things that will not make us happy, and we do it consistently. And part of, I feel like, my journey here is to help people to turn and face a little bit different direction and say, try that path. Mm-hmm. That one will make you happy. Where you're going now, you just keep chasing that rabbit, and it's always going to get away.
What's going to be down that other path for some people? I know it will vary from person to person, but...
It does somewhat, yeah.
What might be down there?
It's two things. It's the path itself. There's not a place on the path. Because so oftentimes we think that happiness is a point in time, and it's not. It's the journey. And the other thing that I think you find down there is yourself. It's not a thing that you get. It's all of a sudden discovering yourself and your own life and your own journey. I mean, a lot of what Diane was talking about earlier really struck me. It's a wonderful case of finding beauty in even one of the most difficult things in life. It reminds me of a way that I oftentimes open up my talks, something, again, I learned from Gilbert and others. You go into the research, and I'll open the talk and say, would you rather win the lottery or would you rather have a debilitating illness? And people think it's a little bit silly, but you find out that the happiness factor really isn't different. If anything, the happiness factor may be greatest with the debilitating illness. I actually said that one time at a graduation ceremony, and a woman walked up to me in the parking lot the next day. I was parking my car, and she walked up and she said, Dr. Harmon, I just had to stop you and say thank you. I said, for what? And she said, the speech you gave yesterday at graduation, you mentioned about, I think at the time I had said something about debilitating illness, and is the phrase I had used. She said, my husband was diagnosed with cancer a little over a year ago, and it's been one of the most wonderful times of our life.
Wow.
And she started breaking into tears, but it was this joy.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I wish that on people,
far
from it, but it's this discovery that it's not the bad things that happen to you, and it's not the things that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's something else. And coming full circle now back to the corporate culture, we oftentimes think, well, gosh, if I will pay you $500,000, if I pay you $1 million, that will make you that much happier, and you'll actually work that much harder. And we find repeatedly that's not the case.
Wow.
And so I feel like when you talk about epiphanies, realizing that kind of a paradox, if you will, about how we act versus what reality is, was maybe the ultimate reality for me.
Could you hurry up and get that book done? Please.
Oh, I love it when I write it. And
I'll bet.
I'm looking forward to having it done.
Your contact information so that people can add to your research, so to speak, or share their stories or find out when the book's ready. How should they be in touch with you?
Probably the best way to get in touch with me would be actually, and I'd be happy to respond to my personal email.
Okay.
And that is wkenharmon, wkenharmon, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
I've actually set up a website, but it too is a work in process, process on managing happiness.
Yeah. Well, I just really want the two of you to be in conversation here. Now, Andy always talks to me about this, that I shouldn't put you on the spot, but I can't imagine that, you know, you have brought me where I wanted. The happiness is the theme. And each of you have found it in unique ways. Diane?
Yeah, no, I was, of course, really resonating with everything you were saying. I think the reason, perhaps, that the couple, the woman that came up to you in the parking lot, could say that it was the happiest year of their life is because, I mean, and I can say from my personal experience last year in the hospital, it's like you become totally present. You become in the now because everything else falls away.
Mm-hmm.
Work, you know, like all the things that we think is so important that we take the most time with often in our life, those are the things that fall away the quickest when there's a crisis with someone that you love, then you're just there with them. Well, not always, but if grace allows, then you're there in the moment. And really, the only place that we can experience happiness or love is in the right now, present moment. It's not about dreaming whatever something's going to happen or think or looking back and saying, oh, if it only could be like that. It's now. It's here. And those kind of moments bring that. And maybe winning the lottery projects you out somewhere. Like, what am I going to do now? Or what am I, you know?
Well, and a lot of the research shows your focus becomes on the money, on what you can buy. I mean, let's look at a lot of the television. Let's look at, you know, all these stories of people who become famous or win a lot of money and what happens to them, because the focus is not the here and now. It's not the journey. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
That experience you went through, that unfortunate yet in many ways fortunate experience you went through, how does that affect your life today?
Well, I feel like I'm alive and I need to keep on living. Mm. And it's again about being in the present. I've had a lot of beautiful contact with Krista on the other side in this past year. And I believe that we both moving on.
Of course.
And so I feel ready to do that more than I did a year ago.
Sure.
And I know that he wants that for me. And yeah, and the other thing I would say about my life now, I don't stress about what you might call the small stuff or work or people's, and when I can feel myself getting stressed about something or angry or upset about something, it's like it doesn't sit so easy with me anymore. that I really have to let it go because I don't live that way anymore,
right,
if you could say.
I do understand. Yeah. And that brings to mind a couple of thoughts is people oftentimes when we're talking about these things, they will think, okay, I need to have an epiphany. I need something big to happen. Therefore, if it's not winning the lottery, then I need something big to happen. Mm-hmm. I need this big intervention. And that's what I try to convince them, that you don't need that.
No.
That you can realize today, and you know the old line, happiness is a choice. It indeed is, and I have to work on it every day. Do I get stressed about things? Do I, when I'm on vacation, check my iPhone a few too many times? I do.
Or if you're driving in Atlanta, right?
Yes, but this morning.
but you talked about the path, that it's a journey. And I assumed that you related to that. That's one of the things when I was with you in Peru, that you and Amaru helped me understand even more intensely that happiness, contentment comes when we're on a path, on a journey, knowing kind of we're there somewhere. And it's
and
fun.
Being in the moment as you're there. Because, the only way for healing and transformation to take place is here, now. And if you're wishing or wanting it to be that way, then you're not here.
I know.
And when I work with people, when I do sessions with people, it's also if pain and sadness of, some situation comes up, say, okay, go into that pain. Because it's all that we push away that keeps nagging at us that's creates the discomfort. But if we actually look at what we've worked so hard in our life to push away, then it frees it, then it releases it. And it's like, you know, something that you're afraid to do, and then you do it, and you say, wow, that wasn't so bad.
So let me inject a question here for you guys, just trying to understand the balance of happiness, because mm-hmm. I totally agree with the idea that happiness is found in the present. I see so many people, especially like Facebook and things like this, they're always counting down to something, right? Mm-hmm. Happiness is 2 weeks away, 14 days till I do whatever, right?
Sure.
And it's always somewhere in the future. But at the same time, we know that for basic human needs, safety is mm-hmm. is a huge concern. And when we think safety, we think about being taken care of in the future. How do you balance those two aspects so that you can find peace and contentment in the moment, but you're prepared for tomorrow?
What you're going back to is a lot of the old Maslow's hierarchy and those types of things with safety. A big part of it is you don't release completely the idea that you have financial obligations and you have to take care of your health and you have to do those types of things. In fact, that can help in this journey. If you go back to the research on happiness and it talks about income doesn't matter, well, it matters at a certain level. If you don't have enough to eat and you're watching your children starve, you're not happy. So there is a point, they have even tried to define that point, whether it's $40,000 or $50,000 of income or whatever it is, and above that point, the money doesn't matter anymore. But that, I think, supports your idea that safety, security, you do have to work on it. Don't worry about it, but work on it. And there's a difference in that approach.
And I would say also from, say, maybe a more spiritual point of view, that like one of the sections in my first book starts with the belief, or my belief, that there is a power that is conspiring to assist us to become our best self. Okay. So it's not to say that it makes bad things happen or that it makes good things happen, only that we're not alone in the journey to find our best self. So if we can trust that there is that there's a force that's assisting us rather than blocking us, then it also means we can let go. I mean, when I got inspired to move to Peru from South Africa, I went without a job, without knowing the language. I did have some savings to live off of, but just trusting that I felt like that's where I'm being called to go, I'm going to go there. And there's always the possibility that if it isn't, then you do something else. You know, like whatever happens, I don't think there was nothing in a practical way that prepared me for Krister getting sick. Mm-hmm. He was such a healthy guy. We were just starting our life together. Everything was like, no, this cannot be happening. And yet, everything that I believed in assisted me to rise up to that occasion rather than collapse.
And I have a sense, Ken, that that's what your book is going to maybe show people from a business mm-hmm. perspective, that we know somehow or other what it takes to be happy, but we allow the facts to get in the way. Or we allow sound management principles to get in the way. Do you want to challenge me on that? Or
no, I think that's actually a very good summary. So often we as leaders or managers, and now I'm already thinking of my second and third book, dealing with happiness and leadership, because mm-hmm. we work a lot with individual leaders and where they are. But oftentimes they set up an environment that does not cultivate happiness. In fact, it detracts. Mm-hmm. And why would you do that? Because the research finds if people are happier, they're more productive. there's actually some wonderful research that just finds happy companies, companies with a higher percentage of happy people are more profitable companies, have higher market share, have higher productivity, lower employee turnover, et cetera. Why wouldn't you want to create that? And we get in our own ways as individuals and as companies.
We do. We do. Yeah. Well, the clock is on us, as it inevitably happens every week. I just don't understand. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. In fact, that's how Ken got on here, because Sheb True said, the man needs to be here, and here you are. Thank you, Andy, for handling the controls, as always.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to our guests, Diane Dunn and Dr. Ken Harmon. Diane, your contact information again.
Well, my email is Diane, D-I-A-N-E, at PazyLuzPeru.com. That's okay. Our website. PazyLuzPeru.com.
And Ken, yours?
Once again, WKenHarmon, WKenHarmon, at yahoo.com.
Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. And I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email or even post us on Facebook. Invite them to listen live or to our downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.